thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Picked up on something.
Here's John Williams.
Every now and then I notice something percolating in society, and I say, wow, that's kind of a thing now, isn't it? I think I saw one yesterday. Stand by. Here it comes. This is John Williams in our beautiful Skyline Studio City, not so pretty to look at today, but hopefully it'll lighten up enough for the Cubs game this afternoon. Looking forward to going to that. Listening to the White Sox here on WGN Radio 2. Okay, so maybe it's just me, but I've noticed on Twitter and even on our nation's highways, bare feet. And it's not just because of the latest Quentin Tarantino film where bare feet play a kind of weird role. But I've seen people with their bare feet sticking out car windows, say on the passenger side, or the bare feet of a passenger up on the dashboard because that's comfortable and it's fun to have your shoes off and it's your car, you get to do whatever you want. There was a post by somebody I follow, I think it was Rex Chapman on Twitter, and the person next to him in an airplane had their shoes off and they put the feet up on the seat in front of them to relax, which I guess is your right. You own that space, but they didn't have their shoes on. And so he told the flight attendant to ask them to take them down, and the person did, but then they put him back up. So then he shamed them on Twitter. Anyway, bare feet. Steve, do you have a reaction to seeing other people's bare feet in inappropriate places?
I never show my bare feet.
Yeah. Some people are wigged out by other people's bare tootsies anyway.
I'm happy to show my socked feet.
Yeah, right. Although even if, I'll tell you what, if they don't smell good, I think you should draw the line there.
Okay, but I mean, if I'm on a plane now, I will take my shoes off.
What would you say if in the car your kids put their bare feet up on the seat in front of them? What if you say if your kids in your car took their shoes and socks off and put their bare feet up on the seat in front of them?
What do you mean by up on the seat in front of them?
They have them on the back of the headrest where you are, say.
Oh,
they're not in your face, but I mean, their feet just sticking out.
If it was there, my kids, I wouldn't care.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If it was you, I'd say something.
Matt Bubala almost resigned the day he saw me clip my toenails. And I don't know that he should resign or see me clip my toenails.
But he definitely should not.
People are wigged out by other people's feet. And I just kind of picked up on that. Saw a lot of action on Twitter, weirdly, in the last couple days on the barefoot phenomenon. Mayor Pete Buttigieg is going to join us in about 10 minutes, unless he heard this part of the show. We'll talk to him about a variety of issues. On Twitter, I'm WGN King John, and we're asking you to leave a question for the mayor there. We'll try and pass it along to him here. Speaking of things presidential, Sun-Times columnist Neil Steinberg wrote about Trump coming off of the Trump Tower, downtown Chicago. You saw that at the Trump Tower in New York City, they are trying to rename the street that Trump Tower is on in New York City, Barack Obama Way, which is funny, not necessary, not going to do any good, but it's just a punch back. I'm surprised that the word Trump on the side of the tower has not been the target of somebody's vandalism efforts, to be honest with you. I'm not suggesting you should do that, but I am a little surprised that there hasn't been more conversation about taking it down, just given how he's taken shots at the city and how the government of the city clearly doesn't like him. Neil Steinberg says in his column, though, that we should landmark that sign and leave it up forever. Okay, Neil, explain yourself a little later on. John, how will he begin to fix our relationships with our allies? Questions being texted in now for Mayor Pete. 630 said, John, I plan on voting for Mayor Pete, so don't mess this interview up. John, please ask Mayor Pete what he believes will happen first. Judge Kavanaugh will be convicted of rape or of proof of Russian collusion. I will listen for the answer. Well, I appreciate you all taking this seriously. John, I'm thrilled you're having Mayor Pete on. Would you ask him if he would run for senator of Indiana if he drops out of the presidential run? I think he's got a better chance of being the mayor of South Bend or the president of the United States than he does being a senator from Indiana or a governor, say. Maybe senator. Governor would be the last thing he could win. I think senator would be a tough vote for him as well, right? Because he can win a small college town.
But senator, he'd have to win the entire state, just like governor.
Right. So. I guess so. But it seems to me like at least there's a little play there. It's more of a national stage. You get two of them My point is, I don't see Indiana putting all of its eggs in a liberal gay basket, and he is that. So governor would be hard. Maybe senator would be easier. I don't know. But you do see my point, that it's maybe easier for him to be president of the United States than governor or even senator of Indiana. I'll ask. John, I'm excited to hear about Mayor Pete. I don't have a question, just a recommendation. He needs more FaceTime on places millennials will hear and relate to him. Yeah, I wonder if he'd consider going on, I don't know, websites, podcasts, radio stations that are more youth-oriented.
You know, he was an intern right across the river here, I believe, at Channel 5.
Yeah. Well, he talked about that to Sneed, I think, in the Sun-Times today, about the fact that he's lived in this city a couple of times. I'm not sure that it's the millennial vote, though, that he needs to worry about as much as the black vote. The rural vote, maybe he's not going to get the rural vote. Maybe you just pass on that and say, I'm going to play for the cities. He didn't exactly spring out of Iowa. 815 said in the... All right, so we'll pause here. Mayor Pete should be joining us shortly. Stay there. If you've got a question for him, you can text it to 312-981-7200. Or you can visit me on my Twitter page. I'm WGN King John. On Twitter, I'm WGN King John. Chuck tweeted in and said, hey, John, I'm a huge fan of Mayor Pete. If he runs against Trump, how will he handle his bullying and bigotry in a debate? Will he hit back harder or keep the focus on issues that are important to Americans? Well, I guess we know how you feel about that, Chuck. And I guess he would take the high road. But I do think you have to have some sort of strategy. There was an article last week, and it said that if you were going to run somebody against Donald Trump and you know how he debates and you know how good he is on stage, you really do need to think about how you play that out. And the suggestion has been that that's not good for the female candidates, even a Kamala Harris, say, or Elizabeth Warren, who don't mind mixing it up, but maybe that big, towering, broad-shouldered man will dominate the stage and will dominate them. That's just his presence. He did it to 17 Republicans in 2016, so maybe that's the way it would play out. But they said that that problem of being sort of strong is also problematic for the men. I mean, if Donald Trump can dominate a woman on stage, so too could he a guy. And maybe the guy looks even more timid or weaker if he can't stand up to the president. Because you would expect that. These are broad brush stereotypes, right? But this is some of the thinking that's out there. So whoever you are, you've got to imagine, how do I handle him in a debate? Do I punch back? And can you? I mean, can you win that? Or do you step back and hope that people will appreciate that you're not going to engage, which didn't seem to work last time? So I don't know. I don't have any advice for anybody on how would you handle Donald Trump in a debate. But I can't think of a candidate more different than him than Mayor Pete. So maybe that somehow would work. I don't know. I think that's a conundrum. How an urban farm is cultivating a bumper crop of jobs and vegetables and good health in Chicago. That's tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9. Oh, is Mayor Pete just listening to that? Okay, we'll start there in 30 seconds.
He probably has some ideas.
I didn't know he was on hold. If you need windows or doors for your home, call the company recommended by Lou Manfredini of House Smarts Radio. Called Gilkey Windows. Gilkey manufactures the highest quality of vinyl and fiberglass windows in an endless variety of styles and colors. Call Gilkey now, and for a limited time, you get up to 35% off on fiberglass or vinyl windows and doors, and no interest financing for up to 12 months. Call Gilkey, 888-3-GILKEY, 888-3-GILKEY. Let's make Mayor Pete Buttigieg wait no longer. Mayor Pete, this is John Williams. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. Hello.
Hello, nice to be with you.
We appreciate your time. I don't know if you overheard our conversation. We were just reading a text from one of our listeners who said, if you were to debate Donald Trump on stage, what would your strategy be? You may have overheard that conversation. What would you say to that?
Well, the strategy is to confront things he says or does that are wrong without allowing him to change the subject and without allowing it to be all about him. Look, I'm happy to present the contrast between myself and this president, whether it's my approach to governance, my approach to management, the fact that I served in the military while he pretended to be disabled in order to avoid serving when it was his turn. But, you know, I think the majority of the debate actually has to not be about him. It has to be about us. Democrats will win, provided the conversation is about how policies impact our everyday lives. The president's unpopularity, I think, is partly a function of his personality, but it's also because you know, there haven't been a lot of solutions that actually make us better off. When we remind everybody that we're the ones trying to get you a higher wage, when I talk about my plan to deliver health care, when I talk about my plan to lift up rural America and how we're going to actually make this economy work for us instead of just looking good on paper while we're falling further and further behind, that's how you win. Deny him the ability to make it all about him. And really change the conversation to how Americans' everyday lives are going to improve because we have me as president instead of the guy we got now.
Latest polls show all of the Democratic candidates beating him. I don't know what your reaction to that is. We know what his has been this week. He doesn't even like the Fox polls. But I think that can be problematic too, right? Because we all know that he has a core of people that don't like him, but he also has a core of people that do. I wonder how you feel about that group and how you capture the people in the middle.
Yeah, look, he's unpopular, and he's unpopular for a reason, but we should not be fooled for 1 minute. He could absolutely win again. After all, the polls didn't look very good for him in 2016 either. Look, the reality is there are a lot of people, and it's certainly true in northern Indiana where I live, which is very much part of the industrial Midwest. A lot of people voted the way they did, not because they think he's a good guy, but because it feels like nothing has worked, and there was a vote more or less to burn the house down. That's why now that the house is on fire, we got to talk about what our solutions are going to be, and not just going back to normal, but really what does a new normal look like where we can actually get ahead. If we're not speaking to that, then I think it will be very hard to win. But if we can answer that, of course he's got his hardcore supporters who will be with him no matter what. You know, the day he resigned, I think Richard Nixon still had a quarter of the country with him. But there's a lot of folks, and I meet on the campaign trail at my events, a lot of Republicans who are frankly horrified by what has been done to their party, looking for a better way. And we can absolutely build a coalition, unify people around things that most Americans want to see, from common sense gun safety reform to an economy where wages are higher and workers are protected, to health care that actually includes all of us instead of this continual drive to take what health care we have away, like the administration is doing.
Do you think the economy is doing well?
You know, there are certainly warning signs that we're on the brink of a recession, but the more important thing to me is that even when the economy is doing well on paper, a lot of us don't feel it. Look, you start the clock the day I was born in the early 80s, and you see numbers like the gross domestic product or the stock market going through the roof, and yet if you go by our wages, if you go by our income, 90% of Americans are barely any better off. That's why when I'm president, we will not measure economic success based on the GDP. We will base it on the income growth for the 90%. There are whole neighborhoods where I live where it's as though the entire economic recovery never even happened, and it's going to be even tougher if and when we go from recovery to recession. We're not going to be stable or successful in this country until we have an economy where you can work full time and know that you will not be living in poverty. And the fact that it's the reverse right now is a consequence of a lot of policy choices that got us here, from undermining organized labor to resisting efforts to raise wages. Now is the time to make the economy actually work for us all, when it's growing and when it's not.
Mayor, before you beat Donald Trump, you have to beat Joe Biden. And his wife, Jill Biden, was in New Hampshire this week, and she said, look, I know that, talking to Democrats out there, she said, I know that you might be candidates who you like better, but you might have to swallow a little bit and support Joe Biden, because Joe Biden is the one who's going to win, or the one who can beat Donald Trump. It's not an ineffective argument. I just wonder how you counter that.
actually think the most dangerous thing we could do politically is to try too hard to play it safe. Look, a guy like Donald Trump would never have got within cheating distance of the Oval Office if the country was not already in a kind of crisis, if there was not a kind of frustration and even disgust with the status quo. So why in the world would we nominate a candidate whose message is back to normal, back to status quo?
Well, but I think the danger some of us also feel the Democrats are playing with is running too far to the left. I mean, Andrew Yang wants to give everybody $1,000 a month. There's ideas of free college or even debt forgiveness. There's just a whole bunch of liberal, very left-leaning issues that I think might trouble people who would otherwise be happy not to vote for Trump, but would make it difficult for them to vote for one of these Democrats.
And that's why my campaign is proposing that we make college affordable, but we're not pretending we can make it free. I want everybody to have health care, and we have a plan to make it happen, but we're not pretending that you can flip a switch and kick everybody off their health insurance plan and have a completely new system in 4 years. Look, what we put forward has to be practical, and I think a lot of these solutions that I'm putting forward are bold, but that doesn't mean being the furthest left you could possibly be. It's about making sure we come up with something that will actually work, and I do worry in this polarized environment that we need to work hard to build a coalition that actually reflects the majority of the American people who want to see higher wages, health care for everybody, common sense gun reform, and a different kind of economy.
Your Douglass plan is named after former slave and abolitionist leader Frederick Douglass. I understand you're talking about that in Chicago tonight at a fundraiser. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, we have a grassroots event tonight that I'm looking forward to the chance to share this with a lot of people, and we're talking about it everywhere we go because I actually think the whole country has an immediate and urgent interest in racial equality. Not only is racial discrimination and a lot of institutional racism really creating a separate and worse experience, in particular for Black Americans, it's also, in the hands of this White House, become something that is dividing the entire country to the point of danger. Remember, the thing that's come closest to actually ending America, destroying the American project, was white supremacy and the consequences that had in the Civil War. Now we're living in a moment where we are divided largely as a consequence of race, and unless we act in ways that the Douglass plan proposes that we do, not only the things that are getting talked about all the time, like the need to stop being the most incarcerated country in the world, but also the need to support minority entrepreneurship and to deal with health inequities that today have a Black mother three times as likely to die in childbirth as a white patient. We got to tackle all of these things at once and with intention.
There's been some conversation about whether or not the president is racist. He famously frequently says he doesn't have a racist bone in his body. I wonder if you think he is or if it's important to find and stick that label on him. What do you make of that controversy around that word?
I don't care about his bones. I care about his words and his actions, and they have stoked racism and even appear to have inspired white nationalist violence in this country. We need a president who knows how to unify people. And one thing you learn when you're mayor of a diverse community is that a big part of how you earn your paycheck is finding ways to bring people together around the greatest divides that exist within a city, a community, or a country. Instead, we have a president right now who's identified as sort of white identity politics that may serve him well politically in the short run, but also divides us at a moment when we desperately need to be a more unified country.
Are you concerned that the mass shooting problem might become or be confused with the white nationalist problem? I mean, there are white nationalist mass shootings, but there's certainly many mass shootings that aren't.
Well, that's right. Those are two overlapping problems, but the white nationalist violence is only part of what we're up against. There are other mass shootings, and of course, as residents of Chicago, and for that matter, my city of South Bend, know all too well, there are also daily shootings that don't get the attention of a mass shooting, but add up to far more grief, far more violence, and far more loss of life. As long as we're in a country that is content or somehow accepts being the only country in the world where this happens routinely, that we're going to continue sacrificing lives and in particular sacrificing our youth. The good news is the vast majority of the American people agree on some of the steps we need to take, from universal background checks to red flag laws, ways to disarm domestic abusers, and keep the most dangerous weapons like the weapons I carried in Afghanistan off the streets of American neighborhoods. And yet, we continue to see Washington unable to deliver. The president, at least briefly, pretended to back some of these common sense measures. Now, it appears once again he's caving to the NRA. It's one more reason why we need political change and, I think, systemic change in order to get things done that actually reflect what the American people want.
I know you have just a minute left. Would it, says one of our listeners, be beneficial for Democrats for the economy to turn in 2020? Are Democrats stoking recession fears to get Trump out of office?
No, I think the conversation we need to have is how to make the economy work for us. Again, if the economy can grow, that famous rising tide, they always say the rising tide lifts all boats, but that actually hasn't been true in my lifetime. Of course, it's terrible for the country when there is a recession. Unfortunately, what we've seen is even when there's a huge expansion, the expansion that began under President Obama and has continued at least into the early years of the Trump administration, so many Americans are still not getting ahead. If your income's going up, it's not going up as fast as things like health care, cost of college, and the cost of housing. And yet the president seems to be telling us that our biggest problem is political correctness. Our biggest problem is that we're not getting paid enough and it's too expensive to live in this country. And Democrats have a plan to fix it. We need to win and unify people around that plan.
They're yelling in my ear that we've got to end this conversation. Is that right, Mayor Pete? You got to be somewhere else now?
That sounds right. I'm getting the nod from across the table here.
We appreciate your time. Listen, the next time you're in Chicago, we'd love it if you came through our studios. We're just down the road from you. You are at the, I believe, Harold Washington Library tonight. Is that correct?
That's right.
Good luck to you on that, and thanks for joining us today on WGN.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Look forward to next time.
Mayor Pete Buttigieg. You are on John Travolta Watch. Because he's not coming to our show. He's coming to do something with Ro. So let Ro have him.
I can't go and sing Summer Loving with him.
Excuse me, Mr. Travolta.
Hey,
can we do a duet?
Come on. Summer Love.
Having some fun.
Yeah, boom. And then he just starts, well, 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 and he's walking down the hall. And then the whole office staff comes out as a chorus, coordinated. Oh, my God.
Everyone just seems to know the dance.
I know.
Flash mob.
Nice. Yeah. What if that happened, Ella? It won't happen if you don't try.
What if?
Where are you, Ella?
I am running down the hall. I just spotted him.
Oh, my gosh. It's happening. Where is he?
He is in a small conference room.
Oh, my God. He's just sitting there. He's not doing anything yet.
Okay. I'm doing it. Can I get any coffee or water or anything for you guys?
So okay. Like no. How did it go, Ella?
They're good.
Okay.
They're good. So I'm walking.
Darn.
The summer night.
Kudos to Rokan, like in 5 minutes, Ella. Tip of the hat to producer Ella for yesterday valiantly trying to get some FaceTime with John Travolta. Just didn't work out. That's the way things go.
That was hilarious. That made my day.
It was, I think, a highlight for a lot of us. I put that right up there with Jay the intern trying to get the interview with the, or trying to find the alligator.
That was great. I loved this one, though, because I could see her on the phone from my little traffic booth. So I was getting
walking around
every
the
angle. Was great.
And that would be the sort of thing that, were I in Ella's position, I would be asked to do, and I would not want to do it. You just feel so, this is pressure.
Yeah, it's like awkward.
And it's awkward, but I've got to do it because I'm in this miserable career of broadcasting, so I got to do things like this. I've been in that position before. Props to you, Ella. Even if it didn't work out, it worked out.
Thanks.
Oh, by the way, so these window washers, isn't that the nightmare? And he wasn't dangling off the first floor, the second floor, the third floor. It was the 58th floor?
53rd, I think, of a 58-story building.
Of a skyscraper, downtown Chicago. Steve set off by Ontario. I must walk by that all the time. I don't know exactly what building that is, but I'm sure I've seen it. And you always see those guys up there and you think, well, it has to be super safe because this is America and because you would never be up there unless everything was never going to break. And the guy's okay, I guess, but wow, that's got to be terrifying. I said, they do not pay those people enough. Producer Aleph, what do they pay window washers in Chicago, please?
High-rise window washers in Chicago make $26 an hour, John.
26. 26? All right. What's 26 times 40? 0, 4, carry the 2. 4 twos are 8, 10. So they make $1,000 a week. So $52,000 a year. If they work all year long, I'll bet they don't work as much in the winter. So say 45 to 50 grand a year, something like that.
Then taxes, Social Security, everything else, you
Union
know.
Union dues.
Whoever, the devil reaching in your pocket, you know, because that's just how it works.
Oh, you've been hanging around Roe too long.
Is that what it is?
But all of that's true. And I don't know. $40,000 is below the average wage in Illinois right now. You know, it's better than $28,000, and some of you are making that. Would you do it for $40,000?
That's just as kinda... someone who has scaled a only 21 or 22 story building, that was terrifying enough to do it every day. I mean, I guess you would get used to it.
You
but
scaled
still.
A 20 story building?
Yeah, me and Ryan Burrow.
Wait a minute, what did I miss? What did you do?
It was leading up to a charity event that was happening over the weekend, so we were previewing it by doing it.
What did you do?
We scaled a 21 or 22 story building in Schaumburg.
You went up it or down it?
Hmm? Down it.
You went down. You rappelled down a 20 story mm-hmm. building? Not happening.
It was.
Not happening.
We have the video on WGNradio.com.
Holy smokes. WGNradio.com. What do I click on when I get there?
I think it's over. It's from like a month ago. I know it was in our section for the Rokan show, but it's
all right.
Somewhere up there.
Let's look for that. Hey, by the way, did you see the front page of the Tribune? On Saturday, producer Griffin and I played the audio. This Joey Santor guy, this botanist, biologist guy who's got a thick Chicago accent, and he was trying to help a fox or a coyote?
Coyote cub, right?
Yeah, yeah. He was on the front page of the Tribune today, and they say he's kind of elusive. Joey Santor, not the coyote. They were having trouble getting a hold of him. But he just returned a phone call from me, and he's now on line 7. Hey, Joey, you're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. How you doing?
You're not going to cuss now, right?
No. I can refrain from using that sort of inappropriate language while on the air.
I thought I saw in a story that you are from LaGrange, or at one time lived in LaGrange, where my wife and I kind of raised our kids in LaGrange Park. Are you from that neck of the woods?
Yeah. I grew up real nice town. It's it's not like these cul-de-sacs in like the northwest suburbs or further out. You know, there's a railroad that runs through there. As a kid, we could ride our bikes everywhere. It's kind of laid out on a grid. It's pretty nice.
Where'd you go to school then?
Well, you know, I went to elementary school there, and then in junior high, I was kind of a bad kid. You know, I didn't get into drugs or anything, but I was just, causing a lot of mischief, and I got sent away to military school. So ever since then, I was kind of, I went to school in Wisconsin for 2 years, and I got sent away to a couple different spots. And then when I was 17, I decided I'd move out to California, because I went out there to visit a friend when I was like 15 and enjoyed it. So I did that.
It's weird, though, because LaGrange does not sport a Chicago accent like you do. Where did the Chicago accent come from?
I don't know. I just, that's how my dad talks. That's how that whole side of the family kind of talks. You know, for the YouTube channel and for that video, I ham it up a bit to make an understatement. And that's mostly just to make it more funny. I mean, I guess the whole thing I view is kind of like a long-running comedy sketch that I never let go of. My friend Al Scorch and I used to make these ridiculous videos pretending just to be a couple of guys, you know? And so we would like ham that accent up and put ourselves in these situations. But, I mean, those guys are people we knew growing up, you know? I mean, whether it was like this guy that worked in a bike shop on Cermak Road in Cicero that I used to know. Or,
sure.
You know, the dads of friends of mine, whoever, I mean... As you know, that's a legitimate, that's a real guy
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere out there.
And actually, LaGrange Park, Western Springs, if you just go a little east, say on Ogden, then you do run into Cicero and Berwyn and places like that, and then you get all kinds of Chicago-related accents. But never mind that.
So
you've got a YouTube channel, and in it you talk about nature, biology, field conservation, animals. Your YouTube channel gets lots of views, but it kind of blew up with about 7 million views of the video of you interacting with this stray coyote. Where exactly did that happen?
That was in Northern California. And, you know, I was going out there to just, you know, on my days off work, I would just go and look at plants and check out, you know, I try to place everything that I see in the context of the geology. You know, and in California, we have very varied geology, obviously. Out in Chicago, it's mostly just limestone. But I was just out going to look at plants, and I saw this little coyote running across the road, and you know, it was like 2 p.m. and this thing looked emaciated, and I thought, that's kind of odd. It's one, it's really young. Two, it's really underweight. And three, it's 2 p.m. They're, you know, you normally see them out at dawn or dusk. You don't really see coyotes out during the day.
In your videos, you know, I think you also educate people a lot, maybe wittingly or unwittingly, but you talk a lot about the nature, the plants, you know, their names and what they mean to you. Are you self-taught, or then did you go back to school somewhere and kind of learn all of this stuff?
Yeah, I'm basically all self-taught. I mean, I went to college for 2 years, but not for anything science-related. And then I just I got into nature later on and just started reading. I mean, it's, you know, the age of the internet. You can use that time to take pictures of your food, or you can use that cell phone time to read Wikipedia and teach yourself things. You know, I just had a lot of questions I wanted to answer, and so when I'd answer them, that would only give me 10 more questions, and I just went down this hole. You know, I've been hanging out in libraries and museums since I was a kid. When I was like 19, I was 20. When I was like 20 years old, I was traveling around the country a lot. And, you know, I didn't have much money, so you just go hang out in the library. And then I just would hang out there and draw and, you know, come back with, like, I'd peruse the stacks, get like 8 books, and then just go sit at one of those huge tables and just post up. I used to do that at Harold Washington, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny. We were just talking about Mayor Pete appearing at the Harold Washington Library later this evening. So let me just play the clip that sort of has made you lately famous. The video goes several minutes, but here's just a little of it. And I think we've caught all of the swears, because you do have colorful language on your videos, particularly when you were interacting with this stray coyote that you saw. But I think it's the tenderness you show to it, how afraid and frail this little doggy is, and how when you try and pet it, he'll turn and growl and show his teeth, but he's such a pathetic creature that he doesn't have a lot of bite in that bark. When you go to help him, you're worried that if he nips at you and he's got a disease, you're in trouble. So this is just part of that video.
No, it's okay. Hey. It's okay. Hey, shh, 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 shh. Come here. Hey, shh, you're okay. Don't worry about it. No, you're not that tough. Come here. Hey. You got to go to a rehab facility or something. Listen to me. Hey, you probably got mange. Maybe you got rabies. I should have brought my gloves. Shh, it's okay. You need help. You know, and I just don't want to get bitten. I want to help you, but I don't want to get bitten. Did some redneck shoot your parents? What's going on? Please don't bite me. But I've had my rabies spider, if it makes you feel any better. It's okay. What happened to your folks? Huh? Did rednecks kill your folks? I think you gotta come with me. I'm gonna take you to a rehab. My friend Cece works in a rehab.
He's petting the dog, the coyote, softly, and it's sort of chilling out. You see his tattooed arms. And the question I think now is, what happened to that coyote? Let's answer that in a minute on WGN. Let's finish our conversation with Joey Santor, who lives in, where do you make a home, Joey?
Oakland, California.
Joey, let's just wrap this up with this. The video that you posted of you rescuing this stray, scraggly little coyote has been viewed like 7 million times. You're on the front page of the Chicago Tribune today. What's the status of that doggy?
I mean, you know, that's the sad part, is the thing. I gave it a flea bath later that night because none of the wildlife rehabs were open. The nearest one was like 2 hours from where I was. And so when I gave it a flea bath, I realized really how bad of condition it was in. I mean, I could put my hand completely around its neck. The thing was emaciated.
Yeah.
And you kind of see that in the video. And so I got her to eat that night, you know, but before I was able to take her to the rehab facility the next day, she, you know, I woke up and she died. And it didn't really strike me that day. You know, it kind of hit me later. When I woke up and saw she was dead, you know, I figure whatever, wild animals die all the time, it happens. But then the next day, it kind of just stood as this larger metaphor to me. And, yeah, you know, it bummed me out a little bit, a lot.
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to say that. Well, that dog was lucky. I keep calling it a dog because it's the coyote. And I think any of us with pets relate a little bit to an animal that's afraid and needs human help. And I think it was lucky to have found you even for a day. I'm sorry to hear that. What's the next video you're going to be posting then?
Actually, I just did one last night about peyote in South Texas.
of course you did.
And,
all right.
You know, I don't have to, yeah, just from a botanical perspective, I don't advocate using this stuff, but there's a ton of cactus diversity in South Texas. They're all, you know, they occupy this really weird habitat near the Rio Grande Valley. So, yeah, it was all about just the low-growing cacti in South Texas.
I appreciate you returning our call, and thank you for doing what you did. Your 15 minutes are up, but I suspect you'll have another 15 down the road. And if folks want to follow you on, say, YouTube, Joey, how do they do that?
Yeah, it's just Crime Pays But Botany Doesn't. That's the name of the channel. And, you know, I'm not doing any of this stuff to get famous. I just want to teach people and get them to take a closer look at the non-human world around them. That's all I care about. So.
Well done, sir. Well, you certainly did that this time. We'll visit again. Thank you, Joey Santor.
Thanks a lot.
And have a good day.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Here we go. We're here till 3, you know. We're still here after 3, but I'm only on the radio till then. And Ro and Anna come on and entertain and inform. And
Lord have mercy.
Here, I see Kevin's over in sports and Lauren Lapka, too. It's the whole gang, the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis. That'll come your way at 3. I get this hour then, and thank you. Mayor Pete Buttigieg, or should I have said Buttigieg? Somebody just texted in and said, after all of this, you're still getting his name wrong. It's Buttigieg, not Buttigieg. Bertrand, were you noticing that? Were you cringing a little?
I wasn't cringing, but
you were noticing?
I think most people say Buttigieg.
Buttigieg, and I said Buttigieg, huh? I thought I saw it on a shirt that it was like B-U-T-T.
Do you get a lot
edge
of your grammar and pronunciation from T-shirts?
Well, when they're being worn by his supporters, yeah. But
I think
anyway.
It's a joke.
Oh, okay.
That's okay.
That's why I just said Mayor Pete a lot. So thanks to him for coming in and giving us his sensible answers. I had so many questions like, what do you think about the president's apparent interest in Greenland, and do you speak Dutch or Danish, you know, or whatever they speak over there? We're going to talk about whether or not we are on the precipice of a recession. I think this is a fair question, too, because it's easy just to blame somebody you don't like when the economy goes bad. But aren't there natural ebbs in the economy? Aren't recessions inevitable? And so if one is going to happen, look how much ground we've made since the last recession. Look how much ground we've made since the election, right? I mean, you'd take that, wouldn't you? So maybe it's only natural that things are going to turn. And if they're being exacerbated by the president's words or behavior, maybe so. But I wonder if it's just inevitable. So I have that question, as well as what can be done to maybe slow it down or stop it, if that's possible, for an economics whiz bang. That'll be around 2:35.
Well, the president was asked about that. You know, they were talking about payroll tax cuts.
Yeah, I saw that.
And his administration said, no. And apparently he just gave an availability and said, yeah, we're always thinking about that.
Oh, so I thought the Chiron said that he was interested in payroll
tax. Yeah, so
he is
thinking about it again. Earlier, his staff had said that wasn't really under serious consideration.
Is he even thinking about Greenland, by the way? Because everybody else is. I haven't read or heard him say anything about Greenland. Right? Have you?
You know, he was asked a lot of questions just now, and we're just getting the release from the White House or from the pool feed, so I don't know if he was asked about it today, but I'll look for it.
There's a story, speaking of the president in the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago should landmark the sign at Trump Tower. Landmark it? And Neil Steinberg wrote it. What the hell are you thinking, sir?
I was thinking of the Vietnam Veterans Wall.
The column starts by trying to get the thing taken down, and I'm calling the mayor's office and the zoning board.
Seriously, you were?
Yeah, I was.
You were exploring how is it that we could get the word Trump off Trump Tower?
Because it's too long. They had to have a little variance to me. It's bigger than it should be, and I figured, okay, they pushed this. And also, the meaning's changed. In 2014, Trump was just some, puffed up plutocrat national joke, and now it's become almost hate speech, right? It's what bigots cry as they're beating people. And so I thought, well, maybe we could take it down in that way. But then halfway through the column, I kind of do a pirouette, and I thought, I had this insight, this flash of inspiration. And I thought, no, we should landmark it, because we can do that right away, force it up, kind of repurpose it as something where people can go and try to heal from all this stuff. And I was serious. I mean, I compared it to Vietnam as far as a time that, and our nation, I mean, you have to agree, John, that our nation is broken in half, and some people love what's going on, and they dig it, and they have rallies. And
okay, so this president is this divisive point, and you don't like him. You want the Stein to stay?
Yes.
In fact, you want it landmarked so it can't come out.
I don't. I mean, a lot of my liberal pals think, oh, we're going to boot him out of office in 2020 and everything's going to be fine. And that, to me, is as delusional as the far right.
What do you think is going to happen in 2020?
Well, I think he's going to win, first of all. But also, even if he doesn't, we're still going to have that Punch and Judy show that we had during the Obama administration, where Fox is cheerleading this sort of rear guard action, and half the country is happy because it's going their way, and then half the country is unhappy.
I'm always trying to find the glass half full. Is one of the good things about the Trump administration that this has come to light?
Absolutely. I use the x-ray of your tumor metaphor. Okay, they show you the x-ray. Oh, John, I'm sorry. Look at this big mass here on your lung. You can get mad at the x-ray, but it's really not that. I mean, Donald Trump is the one guy I don't blame. He's just bringing all this out. All this stuff was here. He's a symptom. He's not a cause.
Well, that's a remarkably sympathetic, fair-minded thing for you to say.
Well, wait a second. What are you suggesting here?
I'm saying that it's easy to fall into the trap of disliking him so much that you become a liberal version of him.
Well, that's a very American thing, is to become the thing we're afraid of. Okay, so like if we're fighting the Axis, hey, let's build our own concentration camps and put our own citizens in them. If we're fighting the Soviets, hey, let's create our own police state, right? So with Trump, it's, oh, God, we hate him, and he's this, and he's that, and he's evil, and blah, blah. No, I really think that it's like a boil being lanced, that he's brought this stuff out.
Okay, so let's just go back to your column, which began, the sign goes up on Trump Tower, or is that, that's actually prelude to that. As a rule, I try not to have rules, you wrote. That's what makes this column such a
draught of delight.
Draught of delight. The closest I come to having a rule is this, never advocate the impossible. But then you wrote about your effort to see what it would take to get the sign off the side of the building, which I've wondered about before. And you pointed two possible scenarios. One is that the citizens inside that building could themselves vote to have
that's
it
happened
removed.
In New York. I mean, it's not a piece of public property. Okay, although in Los Angeles, for instance, they've passed laws, and they basically go to the building and say, you've got to take this sign down for these various reasons. So it's not that it's impossible. It's just that it's a lot of work, and the city has other problems.
But you wonder if the citizens, if just those investors in those units in that building saw the value of those units not go up much or go down, and wonder why, and wonder if the name on the side of the building is what's keeping potential people from coming in, right?
Right.
I'll bet 59% of the population won't even consider it because of the name on the side. You think they would have incentive, even if they like the president, to, for their own financial interest,
it's break already
it down.
Happened at Trump Plaza in New York City. Although I did look into, I said I wasted more time in my life writing that column than I like to think about. But the condos in Chicago have not fallen that much in value. Even though we were 84% for Hillary or whatever.
Okay, but then what about, does the city have an option? Can they just say we've changed our mind or we're going?
The city, I mean, what the law department said is the city could probably make it smaller, but
that's it.
We'd have to fight them in court and it's not worth it. And that's what kind of made me think, what am I trying to do? In other words, we don't want to look at it because it burns our eyes. I mean, that's kind of babyish. I mean, I'm a big believer in understanding what's happening and what's gone on. I mean, if you look at, it's a bad comparison to make, but if you look at Germany, they acknowledge their history and move on with it. And I think we're going to end up acknowledging all this.
Germany
stuff.
Doesn't allow swastikas. Germany kind of whitewashes the history
but
of
they
the
study
Nazis.
It. They don't allow swastikas because they don't want you marching and saluting to them. But they do have memorials and things. I mean, obviously, Trump's big name on that building is not the memorial of shame that I would have.
What about the zeitgeist for the city, though? Just the whole vibe. When people see that, they have a visceral reaction to it, unlike any other building in this town.
Well, that's what started this column was, you know, you love Chicago. I mean, look out your window, right? You're looking out almost at the spot.
We are on the 18th story at 303 East Wacker. This is a beautiful view.
The Wrigley Building, the Intercontinental, what used to be Tribune Tower. I mean, all these, it's an iconic location at the heart of this city, which is the home of the union movement and the home of all these progressive, you know, Ida B. Wells kind of things.
Yeah.
And then to have this hideous brand of shame stuck on that building.
It's
there.
A beautiful building.
I love it. It's like
it's
a skyscraper on Mars.
Building. It is.
You don't take anything away from it. But, you know, frankly, if they were having Neil Steinberg night in the ballroom, I like to think I wouldn't go. Because to me, you know, this is something that represents something so evil. It represents like the negation of American values. You know, people, when they write me, they go, oh, you're a hater. I say, well, what I hate is to see my country that I love dragged in the dirt by these fearful people who don't have faith that we can absorb the same immigrants we've always absorbed, the same way we absorbed their grandparents. You know, it's such an inversion. It's such, you know, and as a journalist, as someone who cares about the truth, you know, to see the king of lies enshrined in the center of my hometown, it bugs me.
The book I'm carrying around, and I went looking for you during the commercial break, and I left it at home, is, I think, called Tribal Politics. It's a book about politics and how tribal it is
right.
In Afghanistan, in Syria, in Russia, and in the United States. And the author does a terrific job of explaining Trump's appeal. I think some of us scratch our heads and say, how can the right, the Trump supporters, not see what you're saying? And the author makes it very clear that even though Trump's a billionaire, everything he does resonates with a group of people that have always felt on the margins. So he doesn't speak perfect English.
Right.
Well, guess what? We don't either. And you can go through all of his foibles and all of his half-truths, which a lot of people fall prey to, and they see themselves in him. And it's not just a reflection, but they like the notion that through all of that, he's fighting for them. I'm giving you a speech here, and you didn't ask
for it. Oh, no, I completely understand. Look, the paper sent me down for his inauguration to Henry County, which is 250 miles south. And if you line up the 101 Illinois counties, Cook County voted, I think it was like 73% for Hillary. And then Henry County was almost, you know, everyone voted for Trump. The nicest people. Butter wouldn't melt in their mouths. Okay, so when I look at his supporters, I don't think they're stone haters. I think they're people who are focused on a very small part of the question.
Sure. And within that is?
Someone told him he's going to bring back the coal industry.
This is why I don't hate the people. This is why I don't fault the people that voted for him the first time. I don't understand the people that go to the rallies now. But I think the people that voted for him, a lot of my colleagues here think I'm crazy when I say this. I don't think that they thought it was going to be like this. They thought he'd be crazy to get elected, then he would come to his senses, that John Kelly would corral him. So they didn't know it was going to be like this. You can't fault them.
I think that they're happy with how it's turning out. Okay,
you think they're what?
They're happy. They think he's doing. They think he's the best president ever. John.
I don't think that's true. I think some of them do.
You're not reading my email. I'm just saying.
Well, that's it. You're not reading my text line. I mean, I understand that. Of course, they're going to feel that way. But if that was 20% of America, that would be a lot of people. I don't think it's half of America. I'm not sure it's 41% of America. Now, maybe that's my hope. I have to pause. Come back and answer this question for me. It's 2:22 on WGN, and that is, would taking Trump's name off his building, that's why you're here, Neil Steinberg's thoughtful pieces in the Chicago Sun-Times a day ago. It's called Chicago Should Landmark the Sign at Trump Tower. You just Google Steinberg Sun-Times, you'll find it. But even if you were successful at that, wouldn't that boomerang in a minute? Neil Steinberg's column in the Chicago Sun-Times on the 18th is about the Trump Tower sign that says Trump. They got a variance before Donald Trump was a candidate where he was, and I'll say, a popular TV game show host.
Yes, 14 years.
I mean, think about that. A lot of us who didn't know his political aspirations thought he was kind of fun on TV.
I think a lot of people still do. They think of him as that star on TV, that great businessman, and that's it.
So the question before the break, you want the sign to come down, but you find out that's problematic. And in fact, at the end of your column, you conclude that maybe it's best it stays up there the same way the Vietnam Veterans Memorial is in Washington, D.C., a reminder of what we've gone through.
I think in America, we have to acknowledge this subcurrent of xenophobia, of racism, of hate. I mean, it's been a thread throughout our whole country. We've had a civil war over it.
And you think that sign will be emblematic of that?
If we have to look at it, I mean, you said yourself, people are always stopping their cars and flipping the bird to the sign. Okay, so they're not worshiping that. They're not admiring that. They are repurposing it.
Seriously, you think there's value in putting a monument up that gets
that reaction? Well, the
monument
is up. So my point was, in other words, let's force them to keep it up. Because what is going to happen is that the condo owners are going to realize that the price of their condos is depressed 20% because nobody wants to live in Trump Tower.
Would taking it down, suppose you were successful, the city, if anybody was successful in taking it off, wouldn't that boomerang?
Absolutely. No one cries like a bully. And so it would allow Trump to be, you know, to say, oh, look what they're doing to my beautiful building, and I'm a victim, boo-hoo. Those mean people in Chicago are hurting me. And, you know, absolutely. That's why, again, halfway through the column, I said, no, let's not take it down. And we can't. I don't want to upend the capitalist system. It's private property. What we could do is landmark it. It's in the realm of the possible, which I try to live in, John.
Jeff, you're on WGN. I know you are on a different side than our guest. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Well, I'm not sure which street it is. It has an L that goes north and south. And when you look down the street and you see that Trump sign, I get the all warm and fuzzy feeling. I'm happy, happy, happy.
Don't touch it.
Don't touch that sign. And by the way, the city council granted the sign to be that large. They allowed it,
yep.
And so now they have to live with it.
No argument here. Thank you for that call. And by the way, you also told producer Elif off the air, if they took it down, there'd be riots on the streets.
Right.
I don't know that there would be, but I get the point.
Well,
and
we
I
have
understand
police
that.
For that. I mean, the thing is that the threat of violence is always kind of, it's their go-to thing, that if Trump isn't elected, the country's going to fall apart. And I don't think we're going to have to worry about that because I think he's going to win again, at least the way the Democrats are going. I mean, who's going to beat him?
630, John, you are wrong. There are a lot of people who think Trump is the best president ever. I think there are fewer that think that now than did when they voted for him the first time.
You know,
they thought they'd get the best president. I think some of them have gotten off the bus.
And Anne Frank thought people were good at heart, John, and look what happened to her. I don't want to argue about it. I haven't done a poll.
What I'm saying
is I've never met anyone who is a disappointed Trump supporter.
Oh, really? You haven't looked. I mean, seriously, I haven't either. But I'll bet if you wrote the column or I did the show and said, let me know if you are a disappointed Trump supporter from 2016.
This is WGN. We should have them call in. Say, call in and say why you voted for Trump and now you're sorry. The phone lines will be empty.
They would not.
Okay.
They would not.
I mean, to find out.
It would be easier to get calls. I'm out of time. But it would be easier to get calls if we said, tell me you love Donald Trump. Right. I get it. But who wants to admit that they got it wrong or that they're disappointed? But I think that number is underestimated.
Okay. Well, as I said, we should look for that.
We should hope for that. Neil Steinberg writes in the Chicago Sun-Times. His piece from the 18th is about the sign on the building. He says it should stay. Nice to see you, Neil.
A pleasure to be here, John.
You think I'm pretty without any makeup on. You think I'm funny when I tell the punchline wrong. I know you get me, so I let my walls come down, down.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. It's 2:38. Music bump out with something that's in the news about now before we go to our next guest. Elif, why are you playing Katy Perry?
Well, she seems to be having a bad summer. She lost almost $3 million for copyright infringement, and now two people have accused her of sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
She didn't comment to Fox News when asked about it, and one accused her of unwanted advances, and another charged her with pulling down his pants and exposing him to other people.
It's funny because I see Katie as kind of an all-American girl. Kind of sexy, kind of fun, but, you know, that's not the lane I put her in, so I'm sorry to hear all of that.
Didn't you talk about her once being way over the top when she was judging one of those
shows? I did. I did, now that you mention it. Oh, that's right, Steve. Now that you mention it, I did.
She forced someone to, she wanted to give someone his first kiss, even though he was like,
it was incredibly awkward. It was bad form. Like I said, this is completely within her lane, and I've always felt that she was a bad role model for America's youth. Thank you for that. 2:39, so you can't turn on TV. You don't see a scroll on any of the channels, really, about the recession or the potential for a recession. And I'm like, all right, so are we about to fall into one? What does that mean? I saw this thing, the NABE, the National Association of Business Economists, and 78% of them feel like we are about to go into a recession. The president keeps pointing to things that you and I can get our head around, like jobs are up, inflation is down, the stock market has had a bad week, but by and large, the market is up, certainly over the recession, certainly over the last election. You could say the Dow is good, even if it's down right now. So which is it? I don't know. Maybe our guest does. Casey Mulligan is here. He's a professor of economics at the University of Chicago, and he was also on the president's, I just wrote it down, and now I put it down. You were on the president's you're one of the president's economic advisors on the, what was it?
The White House Council of Economic Advisors. I was the chief economist there.
I've heard of that. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming into our studio. When did that term for you end? You were there for a year. So was it 2018 to 2019?
Yes, June 30th.
So you just stepped down from that position?
I came back from my leave of absence and back to the university.
Yeah. What role did you have, or does that group of economic advisors have in shaping the president's views on trade and things like that?
Well, he asks regularly when various different policies, whether it be the tariffs or deregulation or the corporate tax changes, he would ask, what do you think the effect on the economy would be, and wages and those sort of things, and that's our job to make our best determination.
So generally what we've seen come out of the White House is in concert with what you think should be happening as well then? Was he taking your advice?
We definitely took the numbers that we gave him. Now, he considers more than just economics. He's concerned about politics and dealing with Congress and winning the next election. So there's other things in his calculus that aren't in mine.
Right. So he might say or do things, as any president would, that might not be economically in the best interest of the country, but he's doing it for more than just that reason. Fair enough?
They're all politicians. We have a democracy, and they get there by winning elections, not by.
But I'm just wondering, as an economics advisor, how often did you feel like, okay, I'm doing some good here? Or did you feel that his words and tweets were at odds with the advice you all were giving him?
Oh, no. He always understood what we were saying. He took it very seriously, and he did not dismiss it, and he used it a lot. I wrote a piece on socialism, and he talks about socialism all the time. We worked on prescription drug prices, helped bringing them down. They were coming down. We quantified that, and he talks about it all the time.
So do you think, for instance, that our trade policy with China, what we're trying to do right now, is good advice, a good direction, or not?
Well, what we told them is, you know, that Reagan had tried to bring down, in those days it was Japan, Japanese trade barriers. Reagan had tried to bring them down using the 301s, and he was successful. Japan backed down and said, okay, we'll give you guys some things. And the president's trying the same thing, and we can just say, well, historically, we're not negotiators, but historically that did work. But tariffs are going to be costly, and while you have them, and that's kind of the upfront game where you have a tariff right away.
But the president has been saying that the American consumers aren't paying for them, that China's paying for these. What do you make of that interpretation?
That's not the interpretation that we provided him.
Well, now we're back to my first question. So how do you feel when you're telling him one set of things and a different set of things come out of his mouth?
He's speaking to 60 million people on the Twitter. I mean, that's much bigger than we economic nerds.
I wouldn't dodge that question, though. I mean, at the end of the day, I get it. He's a politician. He's going to play to his base or to people that might want to vote for him. He's got to say things that make him electable. I understand that. But from a purely economic standpoint, his policy on tariffs with China is not what you think we should be doing.
No, remember I said there's the future and the present. So in the present, we have tariffs, right? And those reduce the size of the economy right now. If we could have the successes that Reagan had in bringing down the Chinese barriers in the future, that would mean growth in the future. And that's a trade-off. And those are, our elected officials are in charge of making those trade-offs.
The reason we asked you to come by, though, is not so much trade, although I suppose trade is very much a function of this potential recession. What do you make of recession talk? How close are we to one?
I don't think we're close to one. Predicting the future is always hard, although the near future is easier to predict. I don't think we're anywhere close to one. The tariffs kind of are already built into this economy. In fact, if they were to come off because of a trade deal success, that would add to the growth that's already coming from deregulations, coming from getting the corporate tax in line worldwide. So I understand there that these economist surveys are upset about the tariffs, but the tariffs just aren't big enough to undo those other successes.
So the tariffs are we're exaggerating their significance.
Yeah. And Paul Krugman and I don't agree on anything, but one thing we agree on is economists love to exaggerate the impact of tariffs. I mean, it's $20 or $30 billion a year in a $20 trillion economy. It can't move it about that big of a percent.
Well, then where is all this recession talk coming from? We had that one day last week where we had that inverted curve, and they said that predicted the last 7 recessions. So is that what this is all about?
The tariffs and the inverted curve is also something people talk about. I've never in my career put much stock in the Fed funds, which is part of that curve, because most Americans don't deal in Fed funds. There's a small group of the economy that deals in Fed funds.
Well, sure, but I doesn't mean we're not victimized by it. I mean, whatever the hell that is, whoever the hell's controlling it, if that affects my business or my pay or my future, then I do care about that.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It has effects in a few close markets, but most of us aren't affected by that.
So, do you think all of this recession talk then is political?
It would be political. And then the Wall Street side of it, they are looking at that inverted yield curve, and historically it has been predictive.
You don't think it's this time, or do you think could be?
It's kind of like looking at, you're an NFL fan like I am, and you say, wow, somebody kicked a 50-yard field goal. Wow, is that amazing? That's amazing to someone from the 1960s, but it's not amazing today. And Fed policy is so different today than it was over these years when the yield curve was predictive. I just don't find it useful to use that historical relation.
How many other economists feel like you about these sorts of things?
Well, I think there's a lot of us who are not that interested in the yield curve, or at most mystified by it, and don't see a strong connection between the yield curve and everyday
people. What would be a good predictor of a recession coming?
The one thing we watch closely every Thursday morning, you get the unemployment claims. And that's actual people being actually fired from actual jobs. And if those were to go up, we have to say, hey, these are real jobs being lost.
And where are we on that?
Those are lower than they've been in my entire lifetime, even though the economy's bigger and there's more people.
Is a problem with, just comment on this, the fact that a lot of people are working these days, and some of them are working 2 jobs, and they don't feel, despite what the president says, that they're catching up, that they don't have that much buying power, even with the tax cut, which we could talk about the debt and deficit. But I mean, am I correct in assessing that a lot of people aren't feeling a lot richer?
You have to be correct on that. If you kind of look where the incomes stand versus the trend they had for the 90s and the early 2000s, we're well below that trend. We made a nice comeback, but there's a lot more room
to
grow.
So what's the value of all these jobs then if they're being held by people who don't feel like they're getting ahead?
Well, it's better than not having the jobs as we did in 5 years ago.
Okay, but if I'm trying to use that as a yardstick for the economy, I'm not sure that's very useful, right? Because, okay, hey, you got a job, right? Well, the object of the game isn't to have a job. The object of the game is to buy a new car. I can't buy a new car with these jobs because they don't pay enough.
Consumer spending would be a very important metric, yes.
And where are we on that?
That is growing quite rapidly.
So what are you saying? If we were maybe we should be patient? Maybe these, maybe people talking like me need to just relax and the tide will come?
Yeah, and I think the consumers are speaking with their dollars. The fact that they're spending more than they have in a long time tells us that they have some confidence in their personal situation going forward in the near term.
Yeah. What else is misunderstood? I mean, this is interesting. I'm glad you're here. Your view is obviously a conservative one, and you worked in the White House on these economic issues, but we need to hear both sides. And frankly, if this makes us feel better, I'm not going to be resistant if it's the truth. What else should we know about this economy and this unending recession talk right now?
Well, I think that the number one secret out there is about the deregulation. And the reason it's people don't know about is it happens in so many places. It's been happening in internet. It's been happening in health insurance. It's been happening in kidney donations. It's been happening in automobiles. It's been happening in oil and natural gas. And I could go on and on. And each one of these by itself, you might say, well, what's the big deal? That's a little something. But you're adding it together in 20 or 30 or 40 different areas in people's lives where the markets are getting better, the products are getting cheaper for people.
As a function of deregulation.
Yeah, deregulation directly has a direct and obvious effect when you look at these markets.
That may not be an end-all for some people. They may say, oh, yeah, sure, that's great for business. But meanwhile, the climate's heating up and there's other social consequences of deregulation beyond the economic.
Well, most of those things I mentioned have nothing to do with the environment. So the internet and a bunch of those things, or health insurance has nothing to do with the environment. We don't save the environment by having expensive health insurance or expensive internet.
Maybe I used the wrong word, but you take my point that I think there are some people who see the president signing these orders, these deregulatory orders of his left and right, and they say that's good for business, but there may be other consequences of those besides just ginning up the economy and making it better for business. What's always better for businessmen and Wall Street might not always be best for voters or consumers.
That's why these things tend to be secret, because they tend to focus on the narrow group of things that tend to be environmental or whatever, It's bottom line. Consumers are saving money. Things have gotten, internet got cheaper. As the president walked in there, internet got 9% cheaper almost overnight.
Casey, would you say that recessions are inevitable? That is, that's just the natural ebb and flow of national economies? Or does a recession always mean that somebody made a mistake?
Well, I wouldn't say that they're inevitable and that an expansion dies of old age. I wouldn't look at it that way. But things do fluctuate, and the fact that we've gone a long time without a recession doesn't mean there's one coming, but there will be a recession someday. If you wait long enough, you'll have one. And is it from mistakes? I mean, historically, a number of the recessions were from, I would say, policy mistakes. Others were from international events, like we had oil shocks when I was younger. I don't know if that's a mistake, but it's a world event that caused it.
Yeah, right. Because the follow up would be, because if it is man made versus a natural disaster or a recession, then what can we do now to forestall it? Just humor me for a minute. This would be my last question. If we are going down that path and you don't seem to be too alarmed by that possibility, certainly not in the near term, what could we or should we be doing, either as individuals or policy wise? What insulates us from the possibility?
I mean, one thing that Milton Friedman recommended, and I appreciate the advice, is just try to have a constant policy. Not a lot of up and down, just do the same thing year in and year out.
Well, hey, Mr. Economic Advisor, have we been doing that? Have we been doing that?
There's a lot of fluctuation from one party to the next.
One party to the next. I'm talking about this administration. It just seems like, oh, wait, we're going to wait until Christmas to enact tariffs. It's a whole host of ideas back and forth. I presume you would prefer to see us pick a course and stay it and it be the right one.
Right. That's right. The trade is a small fraction of all that's going on, but the trade has fluctuated. That's right.
I appreciate you coming in. Casey Mulligan, professor of economics and the former chief economist at the White House Council of Economic Advisors. So nice of you to make the time to come into our studio. I hope you'll join us again.
I'd love to do that.
Hey, Rokan, how are you?
Hello, John Williams.
Next door and window. Let's see, I'm done with them. And Blackhawks tickets go to Donna. Thank everybody. Are you giving away Blackhawks tickets?
It's funny you should mention that. Yes. After 4:30, a pair of tickets to go see, I think it's the same game, the October 14th game.
Against Edmonton.
Edmonton's. Yeah. Yep. All right.
Against the Edmonton's. Good.
Yeah, that's how we do around here. And then we also have Ben Bradley on the J.B. Pritzker makeover of the Thompson Center offices. A little upgrade. I don't know if the last time you were in the Thompson Center, John.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's not pretty inside or out.
It's just a crap hole. I mean, there's just no other way of describing it.
Well, what did they do? Did they upgrade JB's office?
Yeah, I suppose. I suppose they put in, you know, fancy furniture and chairs and carpeting and maybe some little bit of paint or something.
Only for the Democrats, though. The Republican offices have been left untouched.
But I think is it JB's office only?
Nope.
Are they the Democrats, too?
Yeah.
Whose money?
Oh, did Madigan get crown molding? What did he get?
Some special, like some wood paneling, no, I see. Really, that's what I see.
If you're a zillionaire, shouldn't you, even if the state could pay for it, shouldn't you just, as a gesture, say, everybody's suffering right now, I'll pay out of my own pocket for that?
It's one way to do it.
Yeah. I think the feds should redecorate in there, too.
The brown paper bag stuff?
Yeah.
We've seen what that looks like.
Right. Or just what is that thing over there? It looks like is that a camera? What's a blinking red light behind the sconce?
Well, you know it's a bad day when you look up and your office window has brown paper on it.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, that's true. It happens to me every day.
Uh-huh.
All right, John. Thank you very much.
Bye, Mr. Khan. Bye, Ms. Desvlantis.
Bye, John.
See you, John.